Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Every Other Week Tuesday Night Open Call. And this is the other week. This is the one where we are here live. Good evening, Sir John. How are you tonight?
I'm doing excellent, Dave. I'm really happy with some recent rulings I've seen out there. So we'll talk about that.
Yeah, like that one I sent this morning?
Oh, that was choice. That was really.
Yeah. It couldn't have happened to a nicer bunch, too.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, there's been some good stuff. Well, I'm still looking for Mr. Jesse. And he might be a little late getting in off the water or something, depending on what's going on with him.
Well, it might be some big fish out there.
Well, hopefully there's some really big fish in his vicinity that are really, really hungry for anything that moves. Because he sure knows how to move things. Oh, man. Well, anyway, we're here again on Tuesday night to have some discussion of legal issues. And, boy, the board just all of a sudden jumped and put six numbers up there. And guess who's one of the numbers that was there? Mr. Jesse, how are you doing tonight?
Yeah, I was just going to text John and say, I'm here.
The board
felt like you're doing better, John.
And all of a sudden six numbers showed. So.
Yeah, no, I've been here. That's why I was wondering, like, hey, wait a minute, I'm already here.
Yeah.
Been here, done that.
Well, this board gets a little spooky, and we got to get Terry in here and get her unmuted. Good evening, Miss Terry. How are you?
I'm just fine. How are you?
Hey, well, I'd be a little better if my hip wasn't hurting. My hip's been barking at me now for 4 days. And
Again.
Yeah, well, my hip is really barking at me. I mean, to the point where
I don't even know how I did it. Except I dream. I woke up and having a bad dream a couple nights ago. And like I had injured my knee like I did when on the river. And when I got up the next morning, that's exactly how it was. And it's been that way for 2 days.
Jeez.
I don't know how it happened.
Well, I didn't have dreams about my hip, but, for the last couple of years, every once in a while, my hip will act up, you know, for a day or two, and then it goes away. Well, it's been 4 days now, and it's getting worse instead of better. And
what did you do to it?
I didn't do a thing. I just go out and walk every day. I mean, I've made a lot more trips up and down the steps lately with some stuff that I'm doing. But, carrying stuff. But,
and I've been doing that, too.
Yeah.
Maybe
anyway,
you and I should get upstairs.
Maybe I should get downstairs. Yeah. Maybe I should get
downstairs. Yeah, maybe we should give upstairs.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I've done a lot of lately that I don't normally. Up and down the stairs a lot, which I have been. But I didn't twist it or, anything, but it feels that's just weird.
I'm not 35 anymore, so and I know
none of us are.
Anyway, and you know, before we go any further and get into any kind of discussions, Jesse, you got it handy? The patented disclaimer.
Yeah.
We want to make sure we get that done. I don't want to get in trouble doing this. You know, I just really don't want to get in trouble. So.
No, we don't. Yeah, we don't want to get in trouble.
So
anyway,
we let Jesse
guys,
do his magic.
Yeah. Welcome to our call. Like Dave said, it's the every other Tuesday, and today's that every other Tuesday. Dave, I got home yesterday, by the way, so just so you know. Finally, month and 2 days gone.
I was thinking about that today, wondering where you were.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Well, good.
So anyway, if you're here looking for legal advice, guys, you've come to the wrong place. You need to go seek an attorney if you want legal advice. But if you're here to listen or share good news about your situation and listen to us moderators talk about our situation and how we handle them and what we do and the outcomes, then you've come to the right place. Again, if you want legal advice, you need to go find an attorney to give you that. We don't even know what it is, don't care to know what it is, but we are going to have a lot of fun discussing all our legal situations and what we do. So with that being said, yes, Dave, I got back from Winya Bay in Georgetown, South Carolina. On Sunday, the tournament ended. I made the top 10 cut. And
very good.
Got my butt home yesterday. Yeah. So I've had two good derbies in a row. And next week, Thursday, I leave for Gunnersville, or for Texas back. Remember, I got to go back to see you up there. And then
okay.
Then from there, I'm heading off to Oklahoma. Then I'm actually home for like a month and a half, which is great, instead of being gone a month and a half. So,
oh, geez, yeah. you're going to be here in Texas, and then you're going to be right next door in Oklahoma. I mean, good grief. You know, whereabouts
yeah.
in Oklahoma
so
are you going to be?
I'm pretty good. Fort Gibson Lake.
Where is that? In central, north, south, east, west?
It's in the south because it's only 6 hours from you, so it can't be that far. I've already been there, but it's Fort Gibson, Oklahoma. I don't know exactly. I've already been there.
6 hours. It's only an hour for me to get to Oklahoma.
From Dallas, it took me an hour from Lake Fork to you.
Yeah. I just went up to...
It took you an hour to get to Oklahoma.
I drove up to Ardmore, Oklahoma yesterday and took some stuff
Ardmore,
up to Gary, my old roommate.
Yeah. Oh, so I'm assuming you did get that then, what we were talking about before.
Yes, we did. Yep.
Good.
Arrived Wednesday of last week, and I was very busy with it after I got here.
I'm sure.
Pretty neat outfit. Yeah.
Hell yeah. You know where it's at? It's literally, like, it looks like in the middle of Oklahoma.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so
it's right by Muskogee.
Oh, okay. I used to go up through Muskogee up 75 and 69 all the time. I knew where every bump in the road was, the best place to buy gas. And I mean,
yeah,
literally.
East of Tulsa, southeast of Tulsa. Of Tulsa.
Right.
So.
Okay, so it's in the south. More of the southern part and east of toward the eastern side. Okay, no big
yeah.
deal. Not that far. Well,
yeah.
You know, who's got some good news tonight? You got any good news for us? I mean, other than the fact you were in the top 10 in the tournament, this most recent tournament. And,
yeah, made a lot of money, had a good time, and I'll tell you what, I drove 800 and. 24 miles by water at 78 miles an hour every day for 4 days. So 206 mile round trip every day through Charleston Harbor, Winya Bay, right in the ocean in a damn bass boat. That my body aches. It still aches after that.
Man.
Oh my God.
Bounce,
yeah.
bounce, bounce.
So, oh my God. Bounce, jump, bounce, bounce, jump, jump, bounce, bounce, jump, slow down. You know what I mean? It was a lot of, who the hell wants to drive 800 miles in a boat in 4 days? I did it, and about 30 of my competitors did it. So, yeah, it was a hell of a run up to the Cooper River from there. And
that's why we did
Harbor.
It.
Yes, that's right. That's why we did it. So that Charleston Harbor was full of blowboats on Saturday and Sunday. You know, they had some kind of sailboat race up there. There's probably 500 of them. Oh, it was like a checkerboard trying to dodge in things in 4 and 5 foot swells. It was ridiculous. So anyway, long story short, great derby. Had a good time. I'm just tired. I'm so glad to see my wife and my son and my brother-in-law. It's nice to be home. My dog, it's been a month and a day since I've seen my family. So, yes, Dave, a month and a day. It's gone that quick.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
The time goes flies by when you're having fun. You know, what can I say?
Yeah, fun.
Oh, man. Well, you know, but you love what you're doing there, so, you know.
I love it, yeah. The only good news I have
best
is
part of it.
Ben Lowry. Yeah, Ben Lowry. Remember Ben Lowry?
Yeah.
He asked me to do another. He's got a new podcast going on, guys. So he asked me to come on board. And he's doing something like Joe Rogan is over there. And, you know, he's overseas. So it's going to be fun. He got a hold of me today and said, hey, I need you to do a podcast. We're going to talk about some stuff. So it'd be fun. I like Ben. He's a good dude. He's a really, really good guy.
Good.
So that'll be, yeah, that'll be a lot of fun.
Good, good, good.
That's only good news. I got crappy news from you. The judge, he refused to rehear the case, and now we have to appeal it, which I don't really want to do. But, so that's the only news I have for that. I don't have any other news.
Judge, well, you got to do what you got to do.
Oh, of course. You know, we don't care. We just do it. So it's fine.
I think that ruling out of the federal district court in Illinois is good news for everybody.
Yeah, that one I sent out this morning.
Yeah, it seems, and I just love it. The court ruled that it is a violation of the FDCPA to attempt to collect on a time-barred debt in which you do not inform the consumer that paying anything, making any kind of agreement, will reset the statute of limitations on it. Even if you do tell them that it's time barred and that you can't report or sue. Now, the good thing is, the really good thing is, not only is that considered a violation under the FDCPA, it constitutes informational harm, which creates Article 3 standing.
Yep. That's probably the most important part that came out of that.
Right. It's another blow against Spokio. Okay, I said it not only creates a violation of the FDCPA by not informing them that it will re-age the debt in the statute of limitations, it creates an informational harm which affords Article 3 standing for the court.
Oh, that's the key right there.
Right.
Yeah, and the best part of the whole thing was
right.
It was Midland.
Yep, the three-headed beast, our favorite one.
Uh-huh. So
nice.
They got smacked again, trying to play.
That really
against.
Made my day. I've seen, there was an 11th Circuit ruling that was wonderful. That was sent out yesterday. The 11th Circuit is just ripping it up, man. They are not putting up with any shenanigans. And what I've noticed, it's taken like 2 years since the 11th Circuit ruled in my case, and that just, you know, started the dominoes all over the country. And then those 42 state attorneys general stepped in, and the state of Massachusetts, and they've just destroyed the debt buying industry. But I have noticed that, of course, they're not going to try to become compliant with the law because their business models can't support that. Instead, they've been finding more and more creative ways to get around it. You know, but the 11th Circuit is smacking them every time they come up with some new creative way to get around the liability on failing to investigate. And that's what the latest one was about. And the 11th Circuit has finally said, your automated system is nothing more than what did they call it? In short, it's just set up to be a circular firing squad, you know, where all you're doing is parroting like putting an ad in a newspaper and then using that ad in the newspaper as evidence to get a warrant on the president. Same thing. Okay? These automated systems, they're worthless ACDVs, and just checking the data that they sent does not constitute a reasonable investigation, and that's it. No matter how you try to spin it, it's the system that will not suffice.
Yeah. It's the system that really fails their arguments.
They were trying to say it was inadvertent human error. No. The court said it's your worthless system, and you don't get to get away with it.
Yeah, that was a real good ruling. I kind of like these. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I'll give the 11th Circuit work credit where it's due. Being the newest circuit, they had kind of a clean slate when they were created, and they didn't get to take their reputation with them from the 5th when they spun off of there. They had to start from scratch and build their own reputation. Well, the reputation of a circuit court is built on setting precedent on matters of first impression. And since there are, 11 circuits, and they've been around forever, the matters of first impression are not so plentiful as they used to be. It's not as easy for a court to take up something new. But they have done a heck of a job, the 11th Circuit, on creating rulings insofar as the FCRA especially is concerned. So I'm going to give them credit for that.
Absolutely. Yeah, they've been doing good work, really good work, protecting the consumer. That's what it's all about.
Well, the law correctly, abiding by what's written, and
they're
taking
not any lessons from the 9th.
Yeah,
trying to make new law, and say, well, that's not what the law says.
Twisting the words, or what their favorite thing in the 9th is. None of the dictionaries actually have the definitions we need, so we'll just make up our own. That's how it works there.
With a liberal bent.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Well, hey, it's we gotta stay at it. We've had a hand in when I say we, I'm talking about our group and the actions we've taken through the years. We've had a hand in creating some of this change by raising these arguments and going after these people. And I think it's been an amazing journey, but I'll say one thing to finish that comment. We're not done yet. So it's a work in progress.
No, and, so I had a conversation earlier this morning with one of our members who had called me, and I was discussing the existence of consent decrees and stipulated agreements when they are entered into by a federal bureaucracy such as the FTC or the CFPB, the FCC, and so on and so forth. Well, when those are done, usually the CFPB, they end up getting a nice big fat chunk of money out of the CRAs or the banks or the credit reporting or the furnishers or whatever. And, when it's a class action, then the people, they get, some of them are pretty good, especially the ones with against Midland and Portfolio from 2015 and a few of the others. But the thing is that we have to realize as the people out here, okay, it's not the CFPB's job to fix it, okay? It's their job to take the actions which make it possible for we the people to fix it. And by that I mean every time one of those consent decrees is entered into, there is a stipulated agreement signed by both sides. And towards the end of the stipulated agreement, it states what the penalty is going to be if the defendant fails to honor the stipulated agreement and violates again. And that's usually a pretty hefty chunk of a fine, okay? Well, once that's entered into, the CFPB does not have an army of people whose job it is to keep an eye on those that they've entered the consent decrees with and make sure that they are in compliance with the stipulated agreement. That's our job. So we have to do it. It is our responsibility to be aware of the consent decrees and the stipulated agreements and to be watching and to hold their feet to the fire. And when we see that one of these entities is in violation of a stipulated agreement that they've entered into with the CFPB, FCC, whatever, it is our responsibility to then file a complaint with the CFPB and say, hey, the ink's not dry and they're at it again. That's how these people will bleed continually. So, but it takes us. We have to do it. It's our responsibility because, like I said, CFPB doesn't have an army of people to be the watchdogs. We are the watchdogs.
That's right.
So I think we have to be more diligent about it. Exactly.
Yep. Keep your eyes and ears open for these things. When you come across this kind of stuff, let the CFPB know about it.
Well, and the reason that I even brought that up is another one of our members, British, he discovered one that since March of 2017, Experian's been getting away with all over the country. Now, everybody knows that TransUnion has an American company that's their parent company. Equifax has Equifax, Inc., but Experian has always dodged the parent company liability by filling out their certificate of interested persons in every case to state that the parent company is Experian PLC in Dublin, Ireland. Well, they're not. There is a middleman. There is Experian Inc., and it is located at the same address as Experian Information Solutions, the CRA. There is, in fact, an American daddy in between the child and the grandparent. Now, when you go and look at the stipulated agreement on the consent decree that they entered into with the CFPB, in March of 2017, just before the section where it lays out they'll have to pay $3 million if they violate the agreement, it states in there that they admit that Experian Inc. is the parent, domestic parent company, and is liable under the consumer protection statutes, and that they waive any right to make an argument against that in the future and must disclose it. while they're still not disclosing it. So how many CIP pleadings, entries, have they put on the dockets across the nation since March of 2017? And every single time they did that with a fraudulent certificate of interested persons, they're in violation of that stipulated agreement. And they owe the CFPB $3 million.
Yeah.
For each and every time they did it or continue to do it.
Yeah.
And that was because of one of our neighbors who is just... He actually called Dublin and paid for the documentation to get at this information.
Amazing.
Hmm. Well, amazing,
hey, they try and avoid liability. I mean, you know, that's all they're trying to do is escape liability. You know, they're doing all sorts of illegal stuff, and they think, oh, well, we're above the law, and we're big, and we can do this, and we can do that. Well, then you got these pro ses that dig into this kind of stuff and find this and let the regulatory agencies, the oversight agencies, know about it. And oops, they may be writing an awful big check here.
Because what good is a $3 million fine for the CFPB if they don't know when it's owed to them? So every single time you're in litigation with Experian, or you come across a case with Experian, and you're looking at the docket, go look at that CIP. Make sure that it states on there that at least the two entities, the CRA, the parent company Experian Inc., and the PLC in Dublin is irrelevant because there's no jurisdiction. But if the daddy isn't on there, Experian Inc., and that was after March of 2017, that's a violation and it should be reported.
I'll have to go look at my case. They probably did that on mine.
Probably. They did it on mine.
Mm-hmm. Well, if they did on yours, they did it on mine, without a doubt.
Right. Mine is being reported as we speak.
Yeah. Well, tell British mine's out there, too.
I did.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're still looking for good news. The only good news I have is I go down to my mailbox tomorrow, and there should be a check for $500 that the attorney forwarded to me yesterday from the little lady that owns the debt collection agency up in Minnesota. She's paying installments to pay me and pay the attorney, and she sent the third installment. She paid the first one to the attorney. I get the second and the third, and he gets the rest of them. And, of course, if she had settled with me in the beginning, it would have cost her $1,000. Now it's costing her about, well, I think $3,700, something like that. So, you know, you get stupid, you're going to pay the price.
Right.
You know. So, anyway, that'll be a nice little present in the mailbox tomorrow. I'm looking forward to that. And the outfit in California got my notice of intent to sue over the more recent calls to my cell phone, and I haven't heard a peep from them. And I'm kind of thinking that I won't. I did a little due diligence on them. They've been sued here in the Eastern District of Texas a couple times, but it's been a few years back. It's been about 5 or 6 years ago. And it's a company that represents them is somebody I don't recognize. The law firm that represents them is somebody I don't recognize here. So maybe we're going to have to do the dance and you know, we'll just see. When their 10 days are up, then I'll send them a copy of the lawsuit and the notice of pending lawsuit and give them one more chance to answer. And if they don't, well, then we'll just go up to the court and file it and start the dance. So that's the way it works. All right, who else has got any good news for us? If anybody has any good news, hit the one key on the keypad on your phone. We'd love to hear your good news. John, I don't know if you got anything. You're still waiting on a ruling from the 11th Circuit. And I know you're anxious to find out what's going on with that.
I was just saying to myself, muted here, that watching all the stuff that's come down in the 11th and other circuits, I can just see it building up to be good, because there was even a ruling that pulling a credit report is a violation of FDCPA. Remember, we saw that one about a week ago. So we add all this stuff up. It's looking pretty darn good.
Yeah. That was based on the act of reporting, we all know, is an attempt to collect. But now the courts are saying the act of pulling a person's credit report for a collector or a buyer is an attempt to collect under the law. So that is really good.
When they list it as their permissible purpose being collections.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. They kind of give it away, right?
Yeah, they don't leave anything to the imagination there, do they?
Not really.
What's the status on your small claims case that you had going?
We're just like in a holding pattern at the moment, holding our breath. So...
Amazing.
They're dragging their feet, and the Mickey Mouse court doesn't work very fast. So.
Yeah.
That's the hard part, where you have to take the big cup of patience.
Yeah. Well, you know, hurry up and wait, just like the military. Okay, well, we have somebody else here on the board that popped up. Evidently, he's got some good news. Let's go to 781. You're unmuted. Go ahead.
Hello for the evening.
Good evening.
I recently was successful with a debt collector out of New Hampshire that came up with a fictitious assignment of a debt by me that had nothing to do with me. It was wrong names and so forth and so on. In fact, I called the person who had the same name as me. Or it's actually the name of an LLC that we both shared. His was older than mine. And he said, boy, I never heard from these people at all. So I challenged them and I said, send me the verification and so forth. And they sent me something in email, and it wasn't very thorough, and all the names were wrong and so forth. So I went right after them and said they owed me for what is it? It's not CPA. It's the, I think I stated 93A and actually a TCPA, having found some cases that tied the two of them together. They were an easy roll. It took me about 3 months, but the final blow, or probably the final... death knell for them, if you use that word, was that they said, well, we sent you a certified copy of the verification and so forth. And I said, well, I never signed anything. And I asked my wife, who takes the mail and usually and so forth, and did you see anything? Did you sign? No, I didn't. So they settled with me and sent me a several $1,000 check. And it was probably the easiest case I've done. I've done a couple of TCPAs, and I've got another one right now against Lyft, about 10 phone calls, you know, the Uber, the Lyft company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit of a problem, so that's my good news. Anyway, a little bit of the problem there, and I probably shouldn't be taking up the time right now saying this. I can call back because
no, that's fine. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Good news hour. So Lyft has a up in the Boston area, and Lyft has a and they're not listed in the Secretary of State's, you know, the big list in the Secretary of State's for all corporations and LLCs and so forth. But just looking them up online, they're one town over, and I know they're not only in that one town because it's a fairly small town right outside of Boston. They're listed. They have an office there. So I have a friend who used to work for Lyft, doesn't anymore. I said, hey, you got anything to do today? Why don't you ride over there, go into the office and see if there's anybody in there. I can tell you where it is. He says, oh, I know that office. I used to go pick up my checks there or whatever. I don't know. He went over and found the office. So that, in fact, is where I sent my notification of intent to sue for violations of the TCPA and the Massachusetts version of it, the mirroring version, telephone solicitations. And they've got about 2 days to where they're not going to they will have not responded, because I know they're just going to put it on their desk, and who's ever working in there is just not going to know what to do with it. So listening to what Dave said, I will probably try them again versus going, you know, troubling myself with a lawsuit and $100 and so forth to go ahead and file it. But, you know, Lyft is a large organization, so in fact, I'm not sure if I just threw that letter into a black hole or what.
Well, you never know. You never know whether you're going to get a response or not. And by the way, they've got a lot of money because they just went public in the last few days.
Oh, God, yes, they have a lot of money. In fact,
that's $72 a share.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I had success with a cruise company and another company that, you know, Google listings. Everybody gets those calls. Well, one came in and I got their address and so forth, and they called me and settled with me for a few $1,000. But Lyft, you know, they're so large that, you know, what do I do?
That doesn't mean
now?
Anything.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean
yeah,
anything.
What does it matter? Yeah, exactly.
No.
It's irrelevant.
They're right near the courthouse. Maybe if they get something from the courthouse, it's right around the corner. I have no excuse not to go. I better go, or else they just, you know, run and hide and have another latte or something.
Listen, the bigger they are, the more ability they have to pay. That's what you would have.
That's exactly
that's kind
right.
of the way you got to look at it, you know.
That is.
So don't worry.
No, I don't worry, but, you know.
A lot of times it's the smaller ones you got to worry about, whether they're just going to disappear, you know, fold up their tent and go away, and they have no assets to get. That's what the deal was with that debt collection company in Minnesota. They've been sued a bunch of times, and the attorneys down here didn't even want to represent them anymore, and it was Miss Witch's firm. Because they had represented them before on several cases and made settlement arrangements, and then they defaulted on the settlements.
Yeah, right.
So this time, knowing that, the attorney, I had an attorney do this one for some specific reasons, and he put right in there in the settlement agreement, you agree that if you default on these payments, one, that you agree to a default judgment with no argument, and that it's not only against the company but against you personally, the owner.
And you wrote that in because you're pro se, or did you have an attorney do that?
No, right. The attorney did that.
So you hired an attorney.
It's an attorney I've worked with here locally.
Right.
He's the one that's
right.
doing the class action on the apartment complex where I live.
Yeah, and the Midland thing, too, that you, the long.
No, the Midland I'm doing all myself.
Oh, good for
the
you.
The Midland I dove in, that's been the monster of monsters of Monsterland.
Yep, right.
There was 113 lawsuits.
Well, that'll move slow. Guaranteed.
Well, it's been going
slow.
It was 5 years this month that I filed the first case. It's still stuck in the MDO.
Yeah.
5 years.
Yeah.
I'll get my money.
Well,
it's just a matter of when, you know.
So I have another, and I don't know if you want me to call in on this, but this is a call in again, let other people chime in with their
no,
good news.
No, we don't have a huge crowd tonight, so if you've got questions, go ahead.
So Liberty Mutual Insurance Company that we all have all heard of, I had an issue with them where they were agreed to make a payment on a claim for $1,000 for damage to my vehicle involving somebody stopped in front of us and, you know, bumped and both had damage. So they did the appraisal and so forth, and we got down to where the body shop said, okay, we can schedule to bring you in next week and get things straightened out. I called the insurance company, their appraiser, or their adjuster, and said, so we're ready to schedule, and he had already sent me the amounts all broken down, and everything was all set and so forth. He said, oh, take the car in next Thursday. You should be good. The check will be there. I took the car in, dropped it off before work. The check was never there. The body shop calls me up and says, hey, dude, what's going on? You know, I mean, we don't have a lot of space to leave a car here for, you know, out of if it's not can't be worked on and taken away as scheduled. And I said, okay. So I called up the appraiser, and I said, listen, what's going on? They need a check. Just tell me what's happening. He says, I can't talk right now. I'll call you back. I called him 20 minutes later. It's getting near the end of the day, and I know he'd be out of touch. He said, well, you know, I'm taking care of it. And two more calls, and he said, look, I'll call you back. I'm going to straighten this out. He never called back. The body shop said, you got to get the car out of here. We can't have it here. So I did that. I waited for several weeks, didn't hear a word from Liberty Mutual. So I sent them a 93A, which is a consumer protection law in Massachusetts. It's pretty comprehensive. There's books written about it that I'm reading. And sent them three demand letters for treble damages for knowing and for my time involving my shop time, where I'm worth $100 an hour. That's what I charge and get paid. And sent them a demand letter for several thousand dollars. And those letters were ignored, probably lost in a black hole. I finally called them again. I said, where do I send this letter? It's not Boston. I know there's a big building, Liberty Mutual, in Boston. They said, no, you got to send it to the mail center in Los Angeles, which I did, and heard nothing from them. I sent a third letter. This is all after the 30 days expired. And to a person's name who I recalled. I found it in some old notes. And then I got a call from their company they work with, which is Peerless Insurance, who, in fact, I had my policy with. They're its parent company situation. And Peerless said, okay, sorry, you know, must have lost your claim number or got it mixed up with the other party who was also insured by us, blah, blah. Sent me out a check. And then I got a call from an attorney. This is where it gets interesting. From the attorney from representing Liberty Mutual, listed on the letter they sent me as employees of Liberty Mutual, saying that the claim is all settled. You got your check. As far as we're concerned, we did a careful investigation of all the facts, and the claim is settled as far as we're concerned. And at the bottom of the letter, it has a signature of a printed name of one person and the signature of another. And I thought, okay, so is that, in fact, a letter that doesn't hold? It's in fact no response because it's a fraudulent signature. And indeed,
right.
Somebody said, well, you know, lawyers can sign for each other. So at that point, I said, okay, I got to call the boys down and the gal down in you guys. Do you have any knowledge or? And apropos somewhat to what Terry was saying about misrepresentation, you know, talking about Experian.
Well, my first question would be,
saying,
is it all settled?
Cool, but it's Nicholas Defoe, and signed by the head of the law firm named John somebody.
Yeah, but what I'm asking is everything all set? Are you satisfied in the monetary part of it?
You know, I got paid for the I got coverage for the damage, but you know, the fact that I'm sort of into this law world and so forth, and when stuff gets and people are dismissive and they do things that lawyers do, and in fact, I'm reading the case law in which states that if they don't make an offer in good faith, which they in fact didn't, because they didn't realize that this case, or didn't pay attention to the case, that my stipulations were the case went back 6 months. It took me 4 months to get any rise out of these people, ignoring the 93A Massachusetts letters and so forth. I thought, these people need to pay for this. So they sent me the money. They said, it's all done. But am I satisfied? Yes, I can live with it. But I don't like getting a document from somebody that's signed by somebody else. It's just my nature. Maybe I'm digging a little too deep on it, but that's the story.
Well, okay. I guess my question would be, what do you think you can get out of it versus how much time you might spend getting involved in that?
Yeah.
And trying to pursue it. How much exactly. time you said it's worth?
$100 an hour. I take your point. It's in fact not worth it. I've got too many TCPA cases that I've had some success with. Easier
yeah.
to do that.
Yeah. This I think is a case, at least from kind of on the surface in my mind, is pick your battles wisely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yep. You got taken care of on the accident, and you got your money. I assume you got your car fixed, or will get it fixed, and they're gonna pay for it. Okay.
Right.
You've got your TCPA. If I were standing in your shoes, I don't think I would pursue it, because
mm-hmm.
I've got plenty of other things to occupy my time, and I have a limited number of seconds in my entire lifetime, and I know that.
I hear you. Yep.
So I understand the principle end of it from your standpoint, your thought process. I very much understand that. And if you didn't have anything else to do, you had plenty of idle time, and you kind of just wanted to play around with it and see what you could get, well, okay. Fine. But if your time is that valuable and you've got other things to pursue, You got to put both up on the scale and see which one goes down and which one goes up.
I hear you. Take your advice taken wisely. What about that signature, though? In other situations, can lawyers do that on a regular basis, or is that looked at on a scant, or does that depend on the judge that would look at it if the person was to walk in and say...
Well, I guess
signature.
Yeah, my initial response and thought process to your question you just asked would be, okay, you're standing in front of a judge,
mm-hmm.
and the judge says, okay, well, Mr. Jones, what is it that you want? Did you get your car fixed? Yeah. Did they pay for it? Yeah. Oh. What difference does it make if there's two different names on the form? You got your car fixed, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
You put yourself in the shoes for a moment of the guy in the black robe that's going to be examining this. If you kind of look to pursue something on a legal basis,
right?
And think, okay, how are they going to look at it? What kind of questions are they going to ask you? Because the whole thing was over the damage to the car. And, I think that'd probably be one of the very first questions you could ask. Well, did they pay to get your car fixed? Yeah. Okay. But it took longer than I thought. Well, but they did pay to fix your car, correct? Yeah. Okay. Well, what is it that you want?
Yeah, I hear
What
you.
Is it that you think you're entitled to? And how are you going to answer that?
Right. Right. Well, along the same lines, why go after a debt collector when they don't owe you anything, but they told, like that story I told, 5 minutes ago. But why would I have done that? I mean, I take your advice. I'm not going after Liberty Mutual any further because they did pay me.
Oh, I didn't give you advice. I just told you what my thought pattern was. But no.
Yeah,
a debt collector. Yeah, we never give advice.
No, I know.
A debt collector. Oh, anything that comes up with a debt collector automatically gets stuck in my craw, and I want to go after them if there's half an opportunity. It's just the nature of the beast.
Yep. Right, because it's lying and they're buying the debt from somebody else and making money.
It's what they're doing. A debt collector.
Right.
Nobody owes a debt collector a penny.
Right.
And people have to understand that. Nobody owes a debt collector a penny, ever, in any situation.
Yeah.
So if a debt collector is trying to collect money from me, I
got
a problem.
Yep.
And if there's any angle that I can use to come after them, get out of the way.
Yeah, that's what I did. So anyway.
There you go. And sounds
okay,
like you've
done
a really good job, too.
Yeah, we're working on it. There's
you're having good success. You're getting these people to pay up. I mean, hey, congratulations. Good for you and good on you. And don't let me dissuade you from doing it in the future.
And I take no advice. Okay, guys. Have a good night. Terry, really interesting.
Have a good night, buddy.
Okay,
you
thanks.
Too.
Bye.
All right. Okay, and of course, you know, if other people have got questions out here, we are obviously into Q&A here, so, and don't make me go, well, you know, we don't have any more people with their hand up, and I guess we're going to call it a night, and then all of a sudden three people pop their hand. Don't do that. I keep telling people that every time. Don't do that. Let's go to 646, because I know they've got a question for us, or good news.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
Hello, hello.
I'm good. How are you guys?
Oh, I'm just so fine. I can't hardly believe it.
I know. You got a check coming tomorrow. I'm excited for
you. I'm always happy when I got money coming. I like that.
So, it's Sonia. I called, I think, last Thursday on Terry's call. And I thought I made the assumption, Dave, but I did not make an assumption. I had a student loan that was sold. I shuffled through some of my letters, and I actually have a letter from the original student loan saying that they sold my loan to somebody else. They sold my loan to someone else. The account is no longer with them. They reduced my balance down to zero. And we'll ask the credit agencies, blah, 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 to remove the reference on my credit report. Does this help me or does it not help me in regards to, I guess, the debt collector or the other company trying to collect on the loan?
Well, one question to clarify things to begin with. When they sold it, was it in default or not in default?
It was in default.
It was in default. Well, then,
yes.
According to the law, according to numerous court rulings, whoever bought it is a debt collector without question. They can't make any claim that they're an original credit, that they stand in original creditor shoes because they acquired the right to collect it when it was in default. So that sheds a little light on things. So you know you're...
Okay.
You're dealing with somebody that you can that falls under the FDCPA.
Okay. I just want to make sure I was on the right track because I've been studying and taking notes and sending debt validation letters, and I hope that it wasn't for naught because I would have been so upset.
Yeah. Well, now see, it's a matter of getting the evidence. You know, and what I mentioned when we had the conversation before. You have to be careful, and this is for everybody, you have to be careful about making assumptions. Oh, well, somebody bought the debt. Well, if you don't have evidence, proof, that they bought the debt, then you don't know they bought it. You may think they bought it, and
right.
That may be true, but you can't automatically make the assumption that somebody bought something, and... It all depends also on whether the alleged debt was in default at the time that it went to another entity or another person, I should say, and a person can be a corporation or a individual, a live human being.
Yes.
You want to establish if somebody else acquired the alleged debt, did they acquire it when it was in default? Or before it went into default. Those are all very important facts because that all falls, you know, those pieces fall into place when you go after somebody that's trying to collect from you and violates the FDCPA in trying to do it. And you can't just go into court and say those things or write paperwork and say, well, they bought the debt, because you don't know.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
You know, that's why these details, when it comes to the legal arena that we deal with, are so important. And, you know, for, you know, a lot of new people that are learning, you know, they just don't understand, well, you know, why do I have to have proof of that? If they bought it, they, you know, they must have bought it. Well, okay, maybe that's your feeling. That's your thinking. But when the judge asks you, do you have proof that they bought it? And you don't. Well, who's the one that the spotlight's shining on? It's on
yeah.
you, and it can get kind of hot. So
yeah.
what you want to do is gather those pieces of evidence and know precisely, factually, through the evidence that's in your possession, what the real situation is with the facts on the issue you're dealing with. It's extremely important that you do that. It keeps you out of trouble and actually makes your case for you.
Yes, well, I'm glad that I went through my papers and found the letter, because I felt so much better. I did.
Oh, yeah. It's like, all right.
Absolutely.
That's a good feeling when
yes.
you find those kind of things, isn't it?
Yes. And I had them all together. I just didn't recollect in my brain. I guess I had so much paper
yep.
that I just got lost in the paper.
Right. So anyway, now you have somebody else that's trying to collect it. You know that they're a debt collector by law. And they're subject to the FDCPA. So what you want to do is go through your steps and look for your violations. Go to your frequently violated FDCPA guidelines, which are on the website.
Yes, yeah. I printed it out.
And
I have it.
There you go.
Okay. My next question, in the letter it says that it's going to be requested that it be removed from the credit reporting agencies, so I should ask them to take it off the report, because I noticed that it is on my report, but it's closed. It isn't opened.
Well, you request that it be removed.
Okay.
You dispute it. You dispute it with the CRA.
All right, will do. And then I have a
because
question
it, yeah, I'm because sorry. Remember, the CRAs are required to have accurate information.
Okay. Perfect. And I don't know if you guys can help me with this. A friend of mine ran through a problem. She, a single mom, she's self-employed. She's doing odd-end jobs. She got a little bank account, and she's on public assistance as well. But the other day, apparently the IRS levied her account, and I'm not sure if they can do that because she's on public assistance and she doesn't have a job or a reportable income. What can she do to fight them?
The IRS is the only entity that can. They can
really?
Take Social Security. They can do anything they want.
Wow. That's awful.
It is.
Yes, it
it's
is.
True.
But it's true. They have access to all your information. They have more information about you than you can even imagine. They can tell
yeah.
you what your fourth grade teacher was.
I remember you telling me that they have a room, a copy room, that was glassed off so that
That's right. I talked to an individual that actually went there. He
wow.
knew somebody at the IRS, and the guy took him in to that glass-walled room with a computer printer in the middle of it, and so it could be observed from all directions. And
wow.
he watched the stuff spit out of the printer. And,
wow.
and some of the stuff that he saw was the name of one of his grade school teachers. Now, that was long before he ever had any financial transactions. What is he doing with that kind of information?
That's what I was going to ask you. Like, that's so
yeah,
odd.
Well, Well, but does that give you an idea of how much the government knows about each one of us?
Except, wait a minute, stop right. What? Stop there, Dave. That's not government. Okay, the scariest part is the IRS has nothing to do with the government. It's not a government
entity.
This
is true, right. They're a private enterprise. They're a collection agency for the IMF.
Oh, my
and
God.
For the Fed Reserve, which is also not federal. There's nothing federal about the Federal Reserve. Privately owned banking cartel, and the IRS is their collection agency. So that should scare every American to the core, because it is not even your government that's keeping that kind of data on you.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's
they have records of every financial transaction you've ever done. I mean, you know, people wonder how some of these criminals that are, you know, doing all this nefarious financial transactions, you know, are caught. That's how. They have all this information.
Wow. And I just saw taxes yesterday.
Who runs the banking system that does all the transactions? They do.
Yeah.
And who investigates the investigators? That's a good question.
Nobody.
Wow.
No, they've been trying to get them
they
to audit the Fed
been.
And do all sorts of things for years. They won't do it. Congress won't do it. Congress knows what's going on. That's just like Harry Reid made a slip of the tongue here a few years ago. He used to be Senate Majority Leader when the Democrats were in control of the Senate, and he made a faux pas one day and admitted in an interview that paying income tax was voluntary, which it is.
Wow.
Yeah, it's always been voluntary. And back in FDR's time, when they passed it, they swore that it would never be more than 1%.
Right.
How things have changed.
Yeah. That's pretty laughable, isn't it?
Yeah, that is. I just Googled really quick when the IRS started. They started in 1862. So we've been dealing with this since 1862?
Yep.
Wow.
We've been dealing with a lot more than that since 1862.
Wow. Well, that was it for my questions. I'm depressed, so thank you so much. I filed my taxes yesterday.
You just got to learn to work within what's there.
I know.
It's better to know.
There's a lot to learn if you want to go out and go studying.
You know, I'm just forewarned, and it's always better to know who your enemies are than to go through life not being aware, you know, even if there's not anything at this particular point in time that you can do about it, it's still far better to be informed.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you, guys. I'll give her the bad news. I really appreciate your help, though.
Okay. You're welcome. All right.
Good night.
Now, remember, I told everybody that if you've got questions, hit the one key on the keypad in your phone and put yourself in the queue, because if you don't, we're going to say good night, because we've got other things to do.
I
got to
get up at 3 in the morning, so I'm okay. My mother-in-law's having surgery tomorrow. They're going to take her to the hospital at 4:30, so I'm fine with quitting early tonight.
She's
having esophagus surgery, so.
Oh,
yeah.
No. I mean, she's had to deal with cancer stuff and.
Yep, that's why I'm super sensitive and what they're doing. And so, don't beg and plead. If they don't answer, they don't want to call. And they don't
I'm not seeing any more hands popping up, so we're going to go ahead and call it a wrap tonight. We got an hour's worth in tonight.
That's right.
You know, it is springtime. There's nice weather in some parts of the country, and if people are here needing help, great. If they're not, well, that's fine. We'll all go and do whatever we need to do. So I want to thank everybody for joining us. Tomorrow I'm going to be doing a webinar at 2 o'clock Eastern Time. For those people interested, we're going to be talking about TCPA. It's Q&A, but there's been some interesting rulings recently, which I'm going to discuss a little bit tomorrow, and a little bit more about what's going on with the TCPA and Congress and stuff. So we'll have some discussion about that. But, again, it's at 2 o'clock Eastern. That's for members only. If you're not a member, well, I guess you better hurry up and sign up so that you can get in there and you can use all the information on the website as well, because it's all broken down by subject matter.
I probably won't be able to be there, Dave. I got to pick up Haley from school tomorrow. My daughter's boyfriend is having some surgery in Atlanta, so I've got to go get Haley from school tomorrow.
Yeah. So anyway, and of course, Terry, who is just speaking, her call is Thursday night at 8 o'clock. If you're not on her email list to get the documents and call reminders and stuff, send an email to queensongbird, all one word, at gmail.com. Just say, please put me on your list, and she'll send that out to you. Don't wait until tomorrow afternoon at 5:30 or 6 o'clock to do it, because you're probably not going to get an answer. So if you need that, get it done tonight, please. And don't forget, next week will be the off week for the Tuesday night call. No Tuesday call, no webinar. So next week when we get into it, it'll just be Terry's call on Thursday night. And hopefully all of you and many more will join us. But we make ourselves available to help you. But in the absence of people needing help, we're going to go help ourselves to maybe some ice cream and
we'll go help
chocolate
ourselves.
Syrup.
I don't know. I'm tired as hell.
I think there's some ice cream and chocolate syrup that are calling.
That sounds really damn good, I'll tell you. But...
Yes, it
Alrighty.
Does.
Well, God bless everybody. Have a great week, Dave. Thanks again, buddy, Terry, all of our moderators.
Yep.
Can't do it without you guys. And who's doing the webinar tomorrow? Is it my turn tomorrow? Is it an open Q&A?
No, I just told you I'm doing it on the TCPA.
Oh, okay. There you go. So I'm just that tired, David, literally. You know, I got to get up early in the morning.
Yep.
But anyway, all right, so join David.
Go get some sleep,
and,
buddy.
Yeah, you guys have a terrific night. Dave, again, Terry, thanks, all you guys. Can't do it without you guys. Have a terrific night. We'll see you tomorrow.
Have a great night, everybody.
Good night, all.
Thank
Good
you,
night.
Buddy.
Good night.